Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The Kyiv City Ballet danced to a full theater in Paris for the company's last show of its French tour. The tour has left the dancers without a place to go after the war started in Ukraine. In other times, performing at the Théâtre du Châtelet would be a dream come true for the dancers. But with the ongoing war in their country, the dancers feel only a deep sadness. "We are both physically and emotionally exhausted," Ekaterina Kozlova told the Associated Press. She is the company's assistant director. "Everyone in the ballet is worried about their families, loved ones, friends, colleagues at home. It's been very difficult." The Théâtre du Châtelet, in the center of Paris, offered them the stage on Tuesday for the group's final show of a French tour. The dance director of the Paris Opera and some members of her company joined the Ukrainians for a class before performing several ballet classics together. They danced parts of Russian composer Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake and The Nutcracker. For many of the dancers, the chance to train and dance was a way to think about something other than the conflict in Ukraine, Kozlova said. One of the dancers will be going to the Ukrainian border in the coming days to pick up her young daughter, who was taken out of the country. Only some members of the company were traveling around France. Many of the ballet's best dancers stayed behind, waiting to join their friends after they reached Paris. "Most of our artists are stuck in Ukraine," director Ivan Kozlov told the Paris crowd. The city of Paris and the ballet community have helped find temporary housing for the Ukrainian dancers, who say they hope to continue dancing in France and elsewhere. The Châtelet Theater offered the whole group a residency. But for now, Tuesday's last-minute performance was their last. All sales from their performances will go to non-governmental organizations collecting and sending humanitarian aid to Ukraine and neighboring countries. Ukrainian dancers have also looked to other countries for safe places to stay. The Romanian National Opera offered 6 ballet dancers fleeing the war in Ukraine a chance to work with their ballet company. Some of them could be performing next month. I'm Dan Novak.
Dust rises as men bring their horses onto a large field. Another game of buzkashi is about to begin. Buzkashi is Afghanistan's national sport. Its name in English loosely means goat pulling. The sport has been played across Central Asia for hundreds of years. It involves two teams on horseback trying to pull a headless dead goat to one area in a field. A team earns points each time it gets the goat in that area. These days, the goats used for the game are usually not real. Through foreign invasions, civil wars, and the recent return of Taliban rule, Afghans have continued to gather to cheer on their favorite Buzkashi riders. National League games restarted on February 24th, for the first time since the Taliban took over in August 2021. The Kandahar and Badakhshan teams played in front of about 5,000 Afghans, including members of the Taliban. In the past, some games brought fears of attacks. Players faced threats from people in their own province if they played for another provincial team. But the Taliban's severe crackdown on crime has eased the minds of many, including Gulbuddin Ismail Khail. He is captain of the Kandahar team, last year's league winner. "We had a good team last year, but this year is even better, because people are cheering for all teams with a calm mind," said the 37-year-old Khail. He is from Balkh province, but has chosen to play for the Kandahar team. For fans, the sport's importance will survive the country's current crisis, just as it has outlasted wars of the past. Abdul Sabur attended the recent game. He said, "Although there is a lot of poverty and unemployment in our country, we still came from Balkh province to watch this game because we are very interested in the sport."
Apple has launched a new version of its lowest-priced iPhone that has a faster processor and can connect to 5G wireless networks. It is the first upgrade to Apple's iPhone SE in nearly 2 years. The cost of the new device is $429, an increase over the SE's last price of $399. The new launch came during an online company presentation held Tuesday. Apple says the SE's processor, which the company calls A15 Bionic, powers an improved camera system on the new device. The camera upgrades aim to make it easier for users to capture higher quality pictures, especially when available light is low. In addition, the iPhone SE was built with the same strong glass material used in its costliest models, Apple announced. And the device is equipped with tools to help save battery power. But the phone's most appealing feature may be its ability to connect to 5G networks. 5G is the next generation in wireless communications technology. It promises faster upload and download speeds. The technology is designed to reduce communication delays and improve device performance, especially for activities like watching videos and playing games. In the United States, the availability of 5G service is still limited. But mobile phone service providers have announced plans to keep increasing 5G availability. Currently, only Apple's iPhone 12 and iPhone 13 models are equipped to work with 5G networks. Those devices cost much more money. The iPhone 12 starts at $599, while the lowest cost iPhone 13 sells for $699. Industry experts say Apple's last offering of 5G iPhones led many users to upgrade from older devices in hopes of getting faster connections. For example, the iPhone 13 proved to be a hot seller last year. The sales pushed Apple ahead of competitor Samsung to become the world's top seller of smartphones during the final 3 months of last year, research group IDC reported. Apple chief Tim Cook said at the company's launch event, "We are excited for the new iPhone SE to build on this momentum." The latest iPhone SE will be available in stores March 18th. Dan Ives is with the American-based investment company Wedbush Securities. He told the Associated Press he expects Apple to sell 30 million of the latest iPhone SE models over the next year. He said the new model can help fill a need among users who currently own one of an estimated 225 million iPhones that are at least 3 years old. Many of those users will want to buy a less costly model, Ives added. Tung Nguyen follows the smartphone market for Gartner, an American technology research and advisory company. He said although Apple does not make as much from selling iPhone SEs as it does from pricier models, it can still bring in revenue. That is because iPhone users are more likely to buy subscriptions to other Apple services, such as music, movies, television shows, and games. It's always nice when Apple can get you to buy a new phone, Nguyen said. But it's even better when they can get you to subscribe, because that turns into recurring revenue. Apple also announced the launch of an upgraded iPad Air that features a new design, 5G connectivity, and a faster processing chip used in the company's MacBooks. The new iPad Air, priced at $599, will be available March 18th. Also presented at the company's event was a new high-performance computer designed for musicians, video editors, and filmmakers. The system, called Mac Studio, will cost between $2,000 to $4,000 for the main processor. A high-quality 27-inch monitor will cost another $1,600. It will also be available March 18th. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in December of 1941 was one of the most successful surprise attacks in the history of modern warfare. Japanese warships, including several aircraft carriers, crossed the Western Pacific to Hawaii without being seen. They launched their planes on a quiet Sunday morning and attacked the huge American naval and air base at Pearl Harbor.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced.
The attack apparently was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war.
Many of the American military personnel were asleep or at church. They were totally unprepared for the attack. In fact, some people outside the base thought the Japanese planes must be new types of American aircraft on training flights. The sounds of guns and bombs soon showed how wrong they were. The Japanese planes sank or seriously damaged six powerful American battleships in just a few minutes. They killed more than 3,000 sailors. They destroyed or damaged half the American airplanes in Hawaii. American forces, caught by surprise, were unable to offer much of a fight. Japanese losses were very low. There was so much destruction at Pearl Harbor that officials in Washington did not immediately reveal the full details to the public. They were afraid that Americans might panic if they learned the truth about the loss of so much military power. The following day, President Franklin Roosevelt went to Congress to ask for a declaration of war against Japan.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. We will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but we'll make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
The Senate approved President Roosevelt's request without any opposition. In the House of Representatives, only one congressman objected to the declaration of war against Japan. Three days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States. Congress reacted by declaring war on those two countries. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor ended the long American debate over whether to become involved in the Second World War. American politicians and citizens had argued for years about whether to remain neutral or to fight to help Britain and France and other friends. Japan's aggressive attack at Pearl Harbor united Americans in a common desire for military victory. It made Americans willing to do whatever was necessary to win the war. And it pushed America into a kind of world leadership that its people had never known before. President Roosevelt and his advisors had to make an important decision about how to fight the war. Would the United States fight Japan first, or Germany, or both at the same time? Japan's attack had brought America into the war, and it had severely damaged American military power. But Roosevelt decided not to strike back at Japan immediately. He would use most of his forces to fight Germany. There were several reasons for Roosevelt's decision. First, Germany already controlled much of Europe, as well as much of the Atlantic Ocean. Roosevelt considered this a direct threat, and he worried about possible German intervention in Latin America. Second, Germany was an advanced industrial nation. It had many scientists and engineers. Its factories were modern. Roosevelt was concerned that Germany might be able to develop deadly new weapons, such as an atomic bomb, if it was not stopped quickly. Third, Britain historically was one of America's closest allies, and the British people were united and fighting for their lives against Germany. This was not true in Asia. Japan's most important opponent was China. But China's fighting forces were weak and divided and could not offer strong opposition to the Japanese. Adolf Hitler's decision to break his non-aggression treaty with Soviet leader Joseph Stalin and attack the Soviet Union made Roosevelt's choice final. The American president recognized that the Germans would have to fight on two fronts, in the West against Britain and in the East against Russia. He decided it was best to attack Germany while its forces were divided. So the United States sent most of its troops and supplies to Britain to join the fight against Germany. American military leaders hoped to attack Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. Stalin also supported this plan. Soviet forces were suffering terrible losses from the Nazi attack and wanted the British and Americans to fight the Germans on the West. However, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and other leaders opposed launching an invasion across the English Channel too quickly. They worried that such an invasion might fail while the Germans were still so strong, and they knew this would mean disaster. For this reason, British and American forces decided instead to attack the Italian and German troops occupying North Africa. British forces had been fighting the Italians and Germans in North Africa since late 1940. They fought the Italians first in Egypt and Libya. British forces had successfully pushed the Italians across Libya. They killed more than 10,000 Italian troops and captured more than 130,000 prisoners. But the British success did not last long. Hitler sent one of his best commanders, General Erwin Rommel, to take command of the Italians. Rommel was brave and smart. He pushed the British back from Libya to the border with Egypt. And in a giant battle at Tobruk, he destroyed or captured more than 800 of Britain's 900 tanks. Rommel's progress threatened Egypt and the Suez Canal. So Britain and the United States moved quickly to send more troops and supplies to stop him. Slowly, British forces, led by General Bernard Montgomery, pushed Rommel and the Germans back to Tripoli in Libya. In November 1942, American and British forces, commanded by General Dwight Eisenhower, landed in Northwest Africa. They planned to attack Rommel from the west, while Montgomery attacked him from the east. But Rommel knew Eisenhower's troops had done little fighting before, so he attacked them quickly before they could launch their own attack. A major battle took place at Kasserine Pass in western Tunisia. American forces suffered heavy losses, but in the end, Rommel's attack failed. 3 months later, American forces joined with Montgomery's British troops to force the Germans in North Africa to surrender. The Battle of North Africa was over. The Allied forces of Britain and the United States had regained control of the southern Mediterranean Sea. They could now attack Hitler's forces in Europe from the south. The Allies wasted no time. They landed on the Italian island of Sicily in July of 1943. German tanks fought back, but the British and American forces moved ahead. Soon they captured Sicily's capital, Palermo, and within weeks they forced the German forces to leave Sicily for the Italian mainland. In late July, Italy's dictator, Benito Mussolini, was overthrown and placed in prison. The Germans rescued him and helped him establish a new government protected by German troops. But still, the Allies attacked. They crossed to the Italian mainland. The Germans fought hard, and for some time they prevented the Allied troops from breaking out of the coastal areas. The fighting grew bloodier. A fierce battle took place at Monte Cassino. Thousands of soldiers lost their lives. But slowly, the Allies advanced north through Italy. They captured Rome in June of 1944, and they forced the Germans back into the mountains of northern Italy. The Allies would not gain complete control of Italy until the end of the war, but they had succeeded in increasing their control of the Mediterranean and pushing back the Germans. One reason Hitler's forces were not stronger in Africa and Italy was because German armies also were fighting in Russia.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.